Going.
Welcome, everyone. Again, this is the third session of the Eat, Drink, and Be Merry course. We're going to be talking today about the snack time intervention. We've talked about assessing resident consumption at mealtimes, the mealtime intervention, now the snack time intervention. I want to say that Kate and I in our coaching calls have been impressed by the progress you guys have all been making. At the same time, there are a few nursing homes that we've put in calls to where we've had trouble getting hold of the project liaison, and so we have followed up with emails. If you're one of those people, will you please just drop us a line and let us know how you're doing? Otherwise, we will tend to worry about you and possibly start calling you and bugging you with phone calls. So just let us know. With that said, I'll turn it over to you, Sandy, with just a reminder to prompt us when you move on to the next slide. Right now, I think we're all on the very first slide. Do you want us to stay there or go on?
You can go on to objective.
Okay.
Which is slide number two. So the objectives for this third session include reviewing the between meal snack evaluation protocol and providing guidance on how to determine which residents with poor food and fluid intake should receive between meal snacks. And when I say snacks, I'm referring to between meal foods and fluids, as well as supplements like oral liquid nutrition supplements such as Ensure, Resource, Boost, those types of things. Slide number three, who should receive a between meal snack evaluation. I mentioned this at the very end of the last session related to meal evaluation. Essentially, we recommend that residents with low intake who are not responsive to mealtime assistance, meaning that they show less than a 15% gain in their intake in the context of a mealtime evaluation that you all have been working on this past month, we would recommend evaluating those residents for their responsiveness to snacks. Also, residents who are not appropriate for mealtime assistance, either due to dining location or other issues such as staff time. For example, some residents eat most of their meals in their room, or they might be bedbound, or they might have very definitive preferences about their dining location that prohibits staff from being able to provide mealtime assistance in a time-efficient manner. So those are residents who are also good candidates for a between meal snack evaluation. And residents with orders to receive supplements 2 to 3 times per day, because ideally these supplements should be provided between regularly scheduled meals and not with meals. I've also touched on that a little bit before too. So slide number four, why conduct a between meal snack evaluation? Well, our work has shown that most residents with low intake will show a significant increase in their total daily caloric intake in response to staff offers of snacks between meals. And this actually includes residents who are, as well as those who are not responsive to mealtime assistance. So in other words, snacks really work for almost everyone with low intake. Residents who are also responsive to mealtime assistance are responsive to snack provision, and the majority of residents who are not responsive to mealtime assistance are responsive to snack provision. So it's why we recommend the evaluation for really most anyone with low intake. Slide number five, snacks also require significantly less time than feeding assistance during meals, mostly because you're just offering, you know, one food item and one fluid item as opposed to trying to encourage the resident to consume multiple items on a full, you know, meal entree. We've also shown that snacks are actually more cost effective than oral liquid nutrition supplements, meaning that they cost less, there's less waste because residents like them more, the residents' refusal rates are lower, and therefore their caloric consumption is higher when they have a choice of multiple foods and fluids as opposed to supplements alone. So snacks really offer an alternative nutrition intervention for most residents who are at risk for unintentional weight loss due to poor food and fluid intake. Just to give you a better idea of what I mean in terms of the effectiveness of snacks, on slide 6 you see a table. This is from a previous study where we evaluated between 60 and 70 residents. All of these residents had poor food and fluid intake under usual nursing home care conditions, and all of them were unresponsive to mealtime feeding assistance, meaning when we conducted the two-day six-meal trial of mealtime feeding assistance, which we talked about last month, they showed very little or no change in their meal intake. So we used our own trained staff to offer them additional foods and fluids three times a day between meals, and we monitored their meal intake during the same two-day period. So we were offering snacks morning, afternoon, and evening between regularly scheduled meals, and monitoring their meal intake during the same time period. And this table shows you that basically their meal intake remained exactly the same. It was right around 50% eaten on average before, and when we were offering snacks three times a day, it, you know, pretty much stayed close to 50%. The snack calories per day that they were consuming between meals went from an average of a little less than 100 calories a day total to an average of 380 additional calories a day when we were offering snacks, foods, and fluids. And the staff time, this is important to note too, that under usual care, basically supplements were being given between meals. Every once in a while we would see other foods and fluids, but for the most part it was supplements. But really staff weren't providing assistance or encouragement to remote consumption of the supplement. They were simply just kind of dropping the supplement off with the resident. Snacks do require some staff time. I mean, keeping in mind that these are residents who are poor eaters, so they're not going to request snacks, nor are they going to, eat well on their own without some staff encouragement. So on average, getting the residents to eat an additional 380 calories a day required an average of 12 minutes per person per snack episode, although we also showed that you could group residents together for snack delivery, and I'll come back to that as well. So in short, the snacks worked really well for increasing total caloric consumption. They did not have a detrimental effect on meal intake, and they're relatively time efficient to provide from a staffing standpoint. So slide 7, why are snacks so effective? Well, many residents who eat poorly are only going to consume a small amount during any one sitting. So basically snack offers between meals is essentially doubling the number of opportunities per day that the resident has to consume foods and fluids. But there are some key intervention components, namely staff time. A staff does need to spend at least 5 to 10 minutes encouraging consumption. It isn't enough to, drop the snack foods and fluids off to the resident or just, hand them to the resident and walk away. Residents who eat poorly are residents who really need to be encouraged to consume whatever it is you're giving them, and that's true during as well as between meals. And we've also found that resident choice is an important component, either through offering a variety of between meal foods and fluids as much as possible, really helps to encourage better intake. Slide number 8. So the evaluation protocol itself, similar to mealtime feeding assistance evaluation, we recommend assigning either an experienced nurse aide or a hydration tech or social activities personnel to 2 to 4 residents per snack period. And a minimum of either 3 snack periods, ideally morning, afternoon, and evening on the same day, but it doesn't have to be on the same day. and a maximum of six snack periods within the same week. Again, ideally the three snacks on two consecutive days, but I've worked with facility staff who have done, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, morning and afternoon, you know, each of those 3 days. So as long as it's done within the same week and you get 3 to 6 snack periods, that's good. Slide number 9, related to the evaluation protocol. We do recommend monitoring meal intake on the same days through our observation protocol, which is what we covered in session 1. Although I will say that contrary to popular belief, the overwhelming majority of residents do not show a change in their meal intake when snacks are being given. There's very few residents who will have a corollary reduction in meal intake, but monitoring meal intake on the same days will definitely allow you to identify who those residents are. And again, the staff members should plan to stay with the resident for at least 5 to 10 minutes, providing graduated assistance as needed, although if any of these residents are residents who you've already conducted a mealtime feeding assistance evaluation protocol with, then you should already have a pretty good sense about what level and type of feeding assistance is appropriate for them in terms of enhancing their independence in eating as well as promoting intake. We have shown that one staff member can effectively work with 4 residents at a time, and that requires an average of about 20 minutes per snack period. This includes grouping the residents together, offering them choices, and providing the necessary assistance. Offering the choice, as I mentioned before, is very important, or minimally just varying what is given. So if you can't actually give the resident a choice among multiple assorted juices, for example, as fluids and assorted snacks, foods, then you can at least try to coordinate with dietary so that what you offer in the morning is different from what you offer in the afternoon or evening. So again, the variability in terms of what they're given, and ideally giving them a choice among at least 2 different types of drinks or food items. Just to recap, the graduated levels of assistance, they're the same as what we apply to the mealtime evaluation protocol, starting with just a social interaction and encouragement, any sort of setup or preparation for easy access. That's going to be pretty minimal when it comes to snacks. This is just the opening containers and putting a straw in the drink sort of thing. The verbal prompts and orientation and the social stimulation are typically what we use the most of. This is just chatting with the resident, encouraging them to try some more, asking them how it tastes, that type of thing. And then, of course, for residents who need it, the actual physical assistance to eat. I do want to make mention on slide 11 that residents with special diet orders can still be given snacks and a choice. There's lots of items that are appropriate for mechanical soft and pureed and even diabetic. There's plenty of options for these different types of diet orders, puddings and applesauces and yogurts and that type of thing, soft granola bars, all kinds of things that your dietary manager in your facility should be able to help you identify appropriate snack options for residents with different types of diet orders. We've never had a problem with that. And again, as I mentioned before, offering residents a variety of foods and fluids has been shown to be more cost-effective than supplements alone. It results in higher gains in caloric intake, lower refusal rates, and less total expense. Slide 12 shows some popular items based on some of our previous studies, things that the residents seem to particularly like. These are just suggestions based on our own experience. But the key is really variety and choice, as I've mentioned several times. Slide 13. So how do you tell if a resident is responsive to snacks? Again, it's very very similar to the mealtime evaluation. I've tried to make it as simplistic as possible here. We've done, you know, the complicated math and the statistics, but basically what it comes down to is that their meal intake when snacks are being given remains relatively comparable, meaning that you don't see very much change. And if you're offering them three snacks a day, morning, afternoon, and evening, the resident actually accepts something, you know, at least two of these three offers. So basically, most of the time, they're accepting something. And they're consuming at least 100 or more calories per offer. So basically, if they're doing those things, then you would consider them responsive to snacks and somebody who should continue to get snacks. And for those of us who have ever monitored our own caloric intake know, you know, just 4 or 5 ounces of juice alone is 100 calories. So they really don't have to take, you know, if they're drinking 4 to 6 ounces of juice and, you know, eating a granola bar, you're done. I mean, you're well over 100 calories. Slide 14, we actually have, I get asked this question a lot, so I like to comment on it, whether or not there are differences between residents who are most responsive to mealtime assistance versus snack provision. Again, I do want to preface this by saying that we actually have seen that most of the residents who are responsive to mealtime assistance are actually also responsive to snacks. But if we really look at those two groups independently, people who are only responsive to mealtime assistance and only responsive to snack provision, we do see some differences related to cognitive impairment, eating dependency, eating pace and swallowing problems, as well as food complaints. And specifically on slide 15, the snack responder only group, meaning that these are people who don't change their intake at all when they get more staff attention during meals, but do really well with snacks, tend to be those residents with less cognitive impairment. Now, I won't say that they don't have any cognitive impairment, but relative to the other group, they have much less impairment, so they're the more mildly cognitively impaired. They typically also have less eating dependency. Most of these residents are capable of feeding themselves. We notice very few swallowing problems in this group and a lot more expressions of food complaints. So these are your more mildly cognitively impaired residents who can eat independently and don't have any swallowing difficulties, may have some special diet restrictions, such as no added salt or no concentrated sugars, and just, you know, are not very happy with the typical food service. Slide 16. That said, even given those differences, it's still important to keep in mind that doing the actual between meal snack evaluation is the best way to determine if a resident should continue to receive snacks between meals. So I don't want people to be trying to select residents for a snack evaluation based on physical feeding abilities or cognitive abilities, because really you don't know how they're going to do until you just offer it to them for 3 to 6 snack periods within a given week and monitor how they respond. And as I mentioned before, many residents responsive to mealtime assistance are also responsive to snack delivery. And we have noticed that some high-risk residents may actually need both mealtime assistance and snacks combined to get their caloric intake improvements to the point that you know, that they need to be for that individual. Slide 17. The provision of snacks and quality assistance only twice a day, 5 days a week, will have a significant effect on residents' caloric intake as well as their weight status. I mentioned this for mealtime assistance as well. We did a large randomized controlled trial study that showed that maintaining good quality mealtime assistance or offering snacks between meals. For residents who we found to be responsive to these two interventions, using the exact same evaluation protocols that we're sharing with you all today, that just doing those two things twice a day, and specifically we did it breakfast, lunch, and 10 and 2 between meal time periods, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, did have a significant effect on their caloric intake, body mass index, and unintentional weight loss. So again, you don't have to go into this thinking that this is something that you have to manage to do, you know, three times a day, 7 days a week to get improvements in nutritional status. You start with the days and times most feasible for staff, just as you would with meals. These tend to be weekdays and morning and afternoon for most facilities. And also related to snacks, the other thing that we've noticed is that resident consumption of snacks tends to be highest during the morning and afternoon time periods. The evening time period has the lowest caloric consumption from snacks based on the work that we've done. So if you're just going to target two times a day instead of three, then I would suggest focusing on morning and afternoon, or the 10 and 2, roughly. Slide number 18, so staffing implications, we'll come back to this in much more detail during the next session, but I just want to make the point here that that the mealtime assistance evaluation protocol and the between meal snack evaluation protocol really allows you to spread your nutritional care tasks throughout the day. So you're not only targeting those two nutrition interventions to residents who are in most in need and most responsive to them, but you're spreading the nutritional care throughout the day, so you don't have to manage to do everything just during regularly scheduled meals. You've got these between meal time periods as opportunities to get additional calories and fluids into your residents. We found that social activities and volunteers are great additional staff for snack delivery. A lot of facilities have a hydration tech now, and they're in a great position to add snack foods to their regimen of offering fluids. And because residents who need most staff attention during meals tend to be residents who are more dependent on staff for eating and have more swallowing difficulties. In other words, they're more complicated in terms of their feeding assistance care needs. Usually the nurse aides and licensed nurses are better suited for mealtime, unless you also are able to train some of your non-nursing staff to provide mealtime assistance through the paid feeding assistant regulation. Again, we'll discuss various staffing strategies in much more detail in the next session, but I just wanted to mention a few of those things here. So your assignment for this next month is to select residents for the snack evaluation based on your initial observations in terms of whether or not they have low intake, as well as how they did with the meal evaluation. Although you can certainly evaluate somebody for snacks first, even if you haven't yet done a meal evaluation for that person. Implement the between meal snack evaluation protocol for anywhere from 3 to 6 snack periods within a given week, and determine their responsiveness based on the criteria that I outlined earlier in the previous slide, and begin submitting those resident data forms that we shared via email with the other PowerPoint slides and the between meal snack evaluation protocol. You should have one form for each assessed resident for those. And again, as I mentioned, in the next session, slide number 20, we'll start examining staffing resource strategies for nutritional care provision for both during and between meals. And Annie, I don't know if do you want me to go straight to the quiz results, or did you want to say anything about the resident data forms or anything else?
With respect to the resident data form, I think it asks, with respect to each assessed resident, did you observe meals to estimate consumption? Did you do a mealtime protocol? Did you, mealtime trial? And then did you do a snack trial? So in order to cover all of those bases, you will not be able to submit that form until you've, if this is a resident that you're going to try with a snack trial, you got to sort of take that last step. All three steps are covered in that form. So I recognize that we're giving you the form early via email, and it's also going to be on our website. I expect that I won't see any of them until probably toward the end of this month, once you've had a chance to try the snack time trial. And these are forms that you should continue to fill out and submit as you assess new residents. Because even as you're doing a snack time trial, and I know this is ambitious and a lot of nursing homes are not going to get here, but it's conceivable that you would still be assessing, observing meals for, a new resident who's come in. This isn't something that you do, just with one group of residents, but you consider it, over the long haul for all your residents. That said, I know that, starting any new improvement project is challenging, and probably the better word of caution is, go at your own pace. So, but if you have any questions about that form, don't hesitate to call us.
You can also, I'm sorry, did you?
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, don't be shy about skipping around a little bit. There might be some residents who you did the initial observations and their intake was good, or they're already getting good quality assistance and they therefore didn't think that they needed evaluation, and you can indicate that on the form and you're done.
Yeah.
Or residents who you did a mealtime assistance evaluation with and that worked really well for them, and you've already identified them as someone who should continue to get mealtime assistance and you don't see a need in conducting the snack evaluation with them, and that's fine. You're done with them. Or you might have other people who have a poor intake and you haven't yet done a mealtime assistance evaluation with them, and you want to go straight to the snack evaluation because you simply have more staff available throughout the day for snack provision than you do during the concentrated mealtime periods. So you know that that's going to be a more feasible nutrition intervention for you to actually provide on a daily basis, and that's fine too. You can go straight to the snack evaluation. You don't have to do the mealtime evaluation first. So, these are all recommendations based on the work that we've done, but there certainly is room for, rearranging things and moving things around so that it is, best suited for your own particular facility and resident population.
I think that's an excellent point. Yeah. I'd say we have enough time to run through, as a kind of review, some of the answers to the quiz questions to refresh people, and I think we'll still have time for question and answers at the end.
Okay. So slide 21 shows the quiz results for the first question, which is, according to recent studies, nursing home staff tend to overestimate the amount of food and fluid that residents consume at mealtimes. By how much do they consistently overestimate consumption? And Annie and I were chatting about this prior to the call today and really decided that this that our response options were pretty tricky. Basically, our studies have shown that staff consistently overestimate mealtime consumption by 15 to 20% or higher. So really, B or C are probably the most appropriate answers, but anything, B, C, and D categories, you're on the right track. Most people are recognizing that that staff tend to overestimate consumption by 15% or more, and that's certainly the case. There is some variability around that, but the important take-home message is that that the chart documented percent eaten values tend to be erroneous and in the direction of overestimation. So you really can't rely on your chart data to identify those residents who are eating poorly, because you're going to miss a lot of them, which is why session one was devoted to doing independent observations during meals, so that you could more accurately identify those residents. Question number two, according to federal guidelines, and we're referring here to the minimum data set, and we probably should have spelled that out a little bit more specifically. Nursing home residents are considered at risk for weight loss if they consistently eat less than how much of each meal. Well, according to the minimum data set criterion, the low intake criterion is leaves 25% or more of food uneaten at most meals, or the reverse of that, eating less than 75%. And most people chose this option. 42% of you chose B. Although interestingly, another 33%, 22 chose B, 55%. And it's that 50% criterion that has actually been shown to be more clinically meaningful. That 75% criterion can capture a lot of people who are really eating fine for maintaining their current, healthy body mass index and weight, because it really depends on the total amount of calories that a given facility puts in front of the resident. And that can, even though all facilities are required to provide a 2,000 calorie a day diet, some facilities provide substantially more than that. So that 55% is probably more clinically meaningful, but the federal guidelines actually do point to the 75% criterion. And slide 23, question number three. Residents who undereat are also often at high risk for dehydration, constipation, delayed wound healing, or all of the above. And the overwhelming majority of you, 94%, said all of the above, which is definitely the correct answer. And finally, question number four. For best results when estimating a resident's mealtime food and fluid consumption, staff members should either A, use the percentage categories, 0, 25, 50, count each food and fluid item on the tray equally as opposed to assigning differential values to different items, or use a continuous percentage scale or a combination of these. Most of you said, the correct answer is B and C. Most of you said a combination, either A and B or B and C. I think a lot of people said A and B because those are the two different approaches that staff typically use. We've actually found that the percentage categories are pretty unreliable, so we recommend using B and C when you're doing the estimates. It yields a much more accurate estimate of how much the resident is consuming. And the more complicated the math, meaning that, the salad counts 15% of the meal and the main entree counts 40%, and you have to figure out what 20% of 40% is. In other words, the more complicated the math, the more likely is there's going to be error and, big differences between how one staff member does it and how another staff member does it. So you want to make it as simple and straightforward as possible, and also try to maintain consistency among staff. So for that reason, we recommend the B and the C categories. And I think I will stop there so that we have an extra 5 to 10 minutes for any questions that people might have. And or anything else that you need to add, Annie?
No, I just want to say to unmute your phone. You can go ahead and press #6, right? I'm always getting it mixed up. *6 to mute, #6 to unmute. Is that someone who wants to call in? No? Okay. We'd love to hear from you if you have a question, a comment. How's it going at your facility? Is it working well? Any problems you might have? Sharing that helps all of us.
Hi, Annie. Jenny, I just wanted to make sure I understood correctly. So if we haven't been doing the steps from the first teleconferences 1 and 2, we can still use today's data on snacks?
Good question. What do you...
Well, you can if you're pretty confident that you already know that there's certain residents who you're concerned about. Maybe you haven't done your observations, you know, the independent observations that we talked about during session 1 to confirm that, but you know they have other risk factors present. They have a history of unintentional weight loss, they have a body mass index below 20, you know, whatever criteria you're using to identify that person as a nutritionally at-risk person. Yes, you can go straight to the snack evaluation if you like.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Okay. And if people have questions as they're starting to do any of these observations or evaluations, please feel free to email me or call me. I'm happy to, you know, coach you through any of the instructions or suggestions, or, you know, kind of help you figure out a game plan for what's going to work best at your particular site.
Okay.
I do have a question.
Sure.
I think it goes back to that meal observation with the percentages.
Right.
And because you're supposed to calculate the percentage, the amount of each that each person eats, and then take the total amount of what they eat and divide it by that number, and that's the percentage you get for the meal, correct?
For the total percent eaten, right.
Right. So to really be honest, I guess I'm really... puzzled, because to write down percentages of the amount that everybody eats in the dining room, how can that be really realistic? Because it's kind of difficult to calculate the amount of every item somebody eats and count that up and then calculate it. Because to me, I see a lot of error there. So what's an easier way of writing down percentages?
Well, it depends on the purpose. So with all of these, our initial observations, the mealtime evaluation, and the snack evaluation, none of these things are something that you would do for every single person in your facility.
Sure.
You know, you would be targeting these assessments to residents who you're concerned about. You know, maybe they've been maybe they're a new admission, and you want to know, you know, how, where they're starting from. You know, maybe they've been recently hospitalized and have come back, and so, or have other significant change in clinical status. Or maybe, you know, as I mentioned to the previous person with the question, they have other nutritional risk factors present. You know, they have a history of unintentional weight loss, you know, a questionable body mass index. You know, they've been identified in your care plan meeting as somebody that's a concern. So, you know, you could go straight to the evaluation for those people. A crude measure and an easy one to do for nutritional risk is, did the resident eat more or less than half of what was given total? So, you know, looking at the meal tray, considering all the items that's on the tray, you know, did they consume more or less than 50% of what they were given? So that would be a very easy, and in fact, from a supervisory standpoint, it's what we recommend doing in terms of identifying people who are of concern. Because anybody who's consistently eating less than half of what they're given during meals, they need to be evaluated. They're definitely at high risk for poor nutrition.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the question. Other questions?
I have a question.
Yes. Yes, it's coming. Hold on.
Okay. We'll wait.
Well, the question I have is that many people do not eat 2,000 calories when they're home, especially older people
They're living alone. They might just take a bowl of soup or in the morning take oatmeal or cornflakes or something.
Right.
They come here and there's eggs and toast and cereal and juice and coffee.
Right.
They're not used to eating all that. And the same thing for dinner. When they get a big meal, they're not used to having it. Maybe have a sandwich for dinner or something like that, or for supper.
Mm-hmm.
They're not used to having all these meals, and they can't handle that, all that food.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and I agree with you. I think that is true for a lot of the residents. That's why that MDS criterion of you know, leaving 25% or more of food uneaten is not a terribly sensitive or clinically meaningful criterion. One, because, you know, precisely what you're saying, that facilities are required to serve people 2,000 calorie a day diets, and there's a lot of residents where that's just too many calories for them. And, you know, they're able to maintain a healthy weight and a healthy body mass index by eating, you know, much less than that. But most residents, again, if they're consistently consuming less than half of what they're given, then they probably are a higher risk person. And one of the advantages of the estimation by dividing by the total number of items on their tray is that it takes into account, you know, how many items are on their tray. One of the things that we've done in facilities is worked with dietary so that, you know, there aren't so many items put on the tray, so that people, you know, we've seen trays with just 3 items on them, and we've seen trays with 15 items on them. And so part of that is kind of a dietary kitchen tray line management issue. You know, and you might be able to modify that. And it's also another reason why the snacks work well, because of the reason that you said. Really, you know, we're giving them, you know, some of the residents tend to be overwhelmed by the number of items that they're given during regularly scheduled meals, and they really like the snacks between meals, because when they're just given, you know, one small thing, you know, one juice and one food item to consume.
They can do it. Sandy?
Yes?
Oh, okay. It felt like you weren't done there.
Oh, sorry. It sounded like I got cut off a little bit. It's a good point. I think it's a valid point, and you know, again, that's why the snack evaluation works well, and why it's important to get an accurate, you know, estimate of intake. But the other thing that I'm not sure I mentioned related to the snack evaluation is that it definitely requires coordination with the kitchen and dietary, so you really want to work closely with them to see what types of snack foods and fluids are available, you know, for staff to offer residents, what they can provide, you know, what time it needs to be sent to the unit, and for how many people. So unlike meals, it definitely requires some advanced planning and talking to them to make sure that they understand what they need to do and that they're on board.
I mean, if you use a 50% criterion instead of a 75, are you going to get in trouble with regulators, with surveyors?
Not if you can show that other nutritional indicators are healthy and stable. So if you have somebody who's consistently eating 60%, for example, 60 or 70%, but they don't have a history of weight loss, and they have, you know, body mass index of 22, and they don't have hypoalbuminemia, I mean, you know, there's other nutritional parameters that you need to consider in a comprehensive nutritional evaluation. So, you know, somebody could be falling below that federal criterion, but be fine and not need anything. And, you know, that's okay.
So you just want to make sure these other things are documented then.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Other questions?
Okay, Sandy, I guess we'll let you go. I will send out the PowerPoint, the audio recording, if you came in late, so you can catch up with the first part. As always, let us know if you have any questions. And thank you, Sandy, and thank you, everyone, for attending. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks.